And welcome back to Extra Features Editing. Today we have Adam Davis from like the hottest place this summer the world has ever known. Well, maybe you weren't in Vegas, but LA was pretty close from what I hear. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Yeah, it was unbearably hot.
We should tell you everybody your film is Broken Ceilings. I have no idea where they can find it. Where can they find your film?
They can find it a few places. It's on iTunes. It's on Google Play. If you're an Amazon Prime member, it's free for you on Amazon Video. And you can check out all the links on BrokenCeilingMovie.com.
Well, what do you feel that us Canadians don't get? We get Amazon Prime, but we don't get your film. That's not fair, is it?
No, that's not fair. It should be in all the English-speaking countries, so I'll have to look into that if you guys can't get it.
Okay, well, that's good. So you're sitting there, you're sitting at home, and you sent me a film. I guess my first question is, where did it originate from? I mean, you live in L.A., so that gives me some idea.
Yep. It originated from a very personal spot where I was in my life. In the end of 2014, 2015, I was just a little bit, you know, frustrated with where I was because I've been trying to make features for quite a long time, since I was about 18 years old. I had thought I was going to make a movie at 23, like Robert Rodriguez. I thought it was going to be the Young Dynamo. And as I slowly approached, you know, my 30th, 31st birthday, I realized that that wasn't going to be me. I was not like a young Shane Black or, you know, the Robert Rodriguez Dynamo. Like, I needed to work the 10,000 hours on it to actually become good enough to do it. So I just realized that I had to make a film, because I hadn't made a film by the time I turned 30. I was going to turn 31 in July, and I was like, I have to do it when I'm 30. So I just went all out, and I had this idea for a one-room pressure cooker thriller, you know, based in corporate Hollywood that I really wanted to get done. And I knew that, you know, having a first feature, doing something smaller was really the only way to do it. So I just decided that I was going to do it all myself, which was crazy. I didn't want to go through the process of trying to get funding, because that just adds, especially independent funding, it adds a whole nother layer to everything and more time. And I just didn't have the time. So in January of 2015, I started writing the script. About mid to late February, I was done with it. And I went right into the pre-production, got casting people on board. We started looking at cast. I decided I was going to fund it myself. So I put together the budget. I used whatever I could. I did the Kevin Smith credit card thing. I was like, hey, put this much on this. I could do this. Like, I just knew that I had to do it. And it was just a sprint. And I didn't know if I was actually going to be able to get it done. But I sort of felt like it was this train that I was on. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go for it. And people are going to hop on if they want to, if they believe in it. And some amazingly talented people did, and I'm just completely shocked by the talent that I had in front of the camera and behind the camera, and everybody was game to shoot this thing in 4 days, which for a feature film is unheard of. Like, nobody does that, and especially since you've seen it, you know, it's not just a single shot here all the way through, which was my original plan. I was like, maybe I'll try, like, a Wes Anderson approach, where it's just long, slow takes and a lot of dialogue, and maybe we'll be able to shoot it in 4 days. But when we got on set, my director of photography, Jessica Gallant, was like, you know, I think based on your process, we can really shoot a lot more, because what I was really interested in was, after seeing Dallas Buyers Club and finding out that they shot it with all natural lighting. And I was like, you know, I've been on sets, I PA'd, you know, when I first came out to L.A., I know how long it takes to set up lights and do all that. And I was like, we don't have time for any of that. We have to do it in 4 days. That's all I have the budget for. So we just did it. And that was the way that we were really able to accomplish it and move through so quickly. And Jessica was able to get so much coverage. The fact that we used all natural lighting, and the fact that I rehearsed with the actors for 2 straight weeks ahead of the shoot, we sort of treated it like a play. And you know, because on the day it was like, we get 1 or 2 takes, we gotta move. But you know, I think all that time rehearsing really allowed all the actors to really get into these roles, really understand the dynamics. And it turned out great. I think, our sound guy gave us some stats at the end of like the first day, he was like, so we shot 30 pages in one day and did over like 65 setups, which is crazy. So we were moving and everybody was on board. And yeah, and we got this film and it's out there, which is huge.
Take us back to the beginning. You say, you just told me you paid it all off on credit cards.
Yeah.
Have you paid off your credit cards?
I have. Yeah. I paid it off. I am still in debt. You know, I've not made the budget back. Who knows if or when that will happen. But I thought of it more of an investment in myself, because I knew I had done a lot of shorts in the past, and I knew that I needed to have that feature film under my belt in order for people to go, oh, he can do a feature. No matter how small it was, I knew that I just had to have it, get it, put it out there in order, you know, to just sort of check that box. So, yeah, it was just more of an investment in myself, and I'm still, you know, trying to get that money back somehow.
You've also told us you were a PA on sets.
Correct.
Yes. Did that help you in your filmmaking process?
100%. I am not from Los Angeles. I'm from Circle Pines, Minnesota. And what I always thought was that I could, you know, make movies in Minnesota. And I realized after having an internship with Marvel Studios in the summer of 2006, when I came up to Los Angeles, it completely changed my perspective. And I knew that I had to be in Los Angeles to make the type of movies that I wanted to make, to get the connections, you know, to become that writer director of the big movies. So when I first moved out, you know, I moved out with, I think, like $3,000 in my pocket. You know, got a buddy of mine moved out with me, and we just got this 2-bedroom apartment, and we just started at the very bottom. I mean, going on Craigslist looking for non-paying jobs, because it's all about the connections. So we started out, you know, working art department for a music video, you know, where we were like chucking chocolate on this band as they were playing, like Dark Rain or whatever their gimmick was. But those connections, you know, helped us get on to, you know, $20 a day on a short film that ran for 2 weeks, and you make some connections there. And we just started, you know, spreading those connections out a little bit. And I got, you know, some PA work, a couple of days on the movie Hancock, a day on Forgetting Sarah Marshall. But it was mostly like the Hallmark Channel made for TV movies, that I really was able to, you know, learn a lot and make some money on. But going from, you know, super small to really big and just seeing the scope of, you know, how different types and scales of productions operate, was immensely helpful just to know, how do you run a set? And what is a successful set run like? And it helped me figure out, you know, watching the directors, like what kind of director I wanted to be.
Where did you get your location? You started pre-production 2 weeks. You obviously need an office location.
Yes. That was kind of down to the wire. There was one location we were looking at, through, you know, my writing directing partner and my producer on this film, Will Corona Pilgrim. His wife was able to find this location where she worked, had a great conference room, but we could only use it for one weekend. And if we didn't get everything in one weekend, then we were completely, you know, SOL. And I was like, yeah, it looks great, but I need a place where we can do the 2 weekends, because we shot it, you know, 2 days, Saturday, Sunday, and then the next weekend, 2 days, Saturday and Sunday. So I needed a place that we could just do it all. And my co-producer, Connor Holt, found this place, Film LA. It's where everybody in LA gets their permits for locations. But what we found out is that you can shoot in their office for free. All you have to do is pay for a monitor, you know, which is a little bit of cash, but nothing big. But, you know, every location within the film was filmed at, you know, the Film LA office. So the cubicle space, the bathrooms, the conference room, it was all there. And they were so accommodating and so great. I cannot recommend Film LA enough for you know, locations and all that jazz. And for the short film that Will and I did, they also helped find us this amazing house. It's a haunted house short film. It used to be like a halfway house that was owned by the city that they put us in touch with and got us. So they're immensely helpful for anybody in LA who's looking to make films.
So when you're shooting in the bathroom, how did that feel, having this conference call in the bathroom almost?
I mean, it was interesting. There was a lot of tense scenes in the bathroom. There's a scene where one of the characters, Tyler, finds out that he's being let go. He's not supposed to know that he's getting fired, but through a mix-up with a laptop that his boss, Ken, was using, he sees, you know, the document sheet for the end of the year, finds out, oh, he's getting let go, and just sort of flares out. So shooting that was so much fun because the actor, Rainn Jameson, really got into the headspace and all the emotions that he goes through of being, of course, first angry that he knows he's going to be let go, and then sort of resigned to his fate, you know, like, what can he do? And that's where he sort of hatches the plan where he's going to try to sabotage the call to get back, you know, at his boss who essentially just screwed him over.
Yeah, your whole film seems to be screwing one person over or the other. And I don't want to go any more into that because that's kind of like the whole plot if I get in. Because, I mean, you have one guy left hooking somebody and somebody else right hooking someone else. And at the same time, they're all getting hooked.
Right.
And exactly. I think I've done that pretty nice without ruining anything.
Perfect. Yeah.
Okay, good. Because I feel bad. So that'll lead me into my next question. You have a lot of film industry talk in this.
Yeah.
Now, is that from firsthand knowledge, like doing the deals, the parties?
Yeah, a bit of it all. I've been out in L.A. for a little over 10 years now. So you just sort of soak that up, you know, the kind of talk that corporate Hollywood has, you know, the sort of jargon. Of course, you know, the party talk and all that stuff and just how people communicate, which I think is different a little bit than other industries. But to me, it was very important to go all in on the jargon, even though it's the sort of thing that could be very alienating for somebody to walk into an industry and a specific subset of an industry, like, you know, the sales side of promotions of corporate Hollywood. Like, nobody talks about that. You know, nobody really knows about that. But I was like, I have to do it justice, and I have to have it be super realistic, even at the risk of alienating people. But what I hoped to do is, through, you know, people talking about the deal, you were learning more about the characters and the relationships and their interactions, even more so than you were about, you know, X specific deal about, oh, this product placement, you know, which isn't on a whole very interesting, but I sort of use that as a way to get the character relationships across.
I think that was well done. I thought that was very well done. I do have one minor quibble. I want to bring this up to you. See, I want to see if you notice.
Okay.
Ken's tie is wrong. It needs to be tightened in his scene. Drove me nuts. It drove me nuts. Sorry. I was like, nope, that's wrong. His tie needs to be tighter. And the two guys have the same clothes on. Is there a reason for that?
You mean Tyler and Garrett?
Yes.
Yes. And there is a very specific reason for that, because I wanted to show that Garrett is sort of like another world version of Tyler. So he's a different shade, but he's essentially the same person.
They were. I don't mean to, in the movie, I can't tell them apart. I couldn't tell you either of his names. I just know one Stooge one, one Stooge two. That's the way I took them.
Yeah. But that was the sort of hope, is that to Angela, Ken's assistant, an African-American female, in some way, you know, all of these white men who dominate this office, maybe they do all just sort of look the same because, you know, it's sort of homogenized in that regard, to her at least.
Let's discuss Angela since you bring her up. Let's get into the casting first. How did you get your cast before we get to Angela?
The first cast that I personally cast was Regan Wilson, who plays the angry, abusive boss.
Yes, Ken.
And I just went onto one of those free casting websites that they have where you can just submit a project and actors can, you know, come at you with their resumes and their reels. And this was when I was sort of like really doing it myself before I brought on my casting person, Jamie. And he just blew me away. Like, you don't know, honestly, what type of quality that you're getting through that, because you're not going through agents, you're not going through managers. It's just a generic site where literally any actor, you know, qualified or not, can submit to projects. But he really stood out. I remember his audition tape. Like, he just nailed the anger of this person, but also the bit of, you know, like, softness inside, because I wanted you to hate him.
Oh, yeah.
But I also wanted you to understand him. That was so important. And I think Reagan did a fantastic job with that.
A couple of things on Reagan. I thought he reminded me a lot of Powers Booth.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll take him totally as that. And yeah, I do want to kick him in the nuts.
Right.
Throughout the whole film, I want to kick him right in the nuts.
Yeah.
I've never worked for him, and I don't think I could have worked for him. And so that's the way I looked at him.
That's fantastic.
That's why his tie was wrong to me. His tie would have been perfect to me.
Well, going back to that, because Ken is so confident in his abilities, and so because, you know, for this, the big call that this surrounds by, you know, Ken's done so much legwork to get this elusive Mr. Bradford, you know, to put in his electronics company to do some product placement in this big Hollywood film they're doing. He's sort of not phoning it in, but he's confident that he's got this deal locked. So that's why I had him, you know, loosen the tie a little bit, because, you know, he thinks it's good to go.
I get that impression, but he seems to lose his cool a little bit during the negotiations.
He does.
Things aren't quite going his way. Now, how'd you cast Angela?
Angela came, her manager submitted to my casting agent, and Karen Kendrick just came into my life like an angel, and I will forever be grateful, because she is just the most talented actor who people are going to know worldwide very, very soon. She's in The Hate U Give. She plays Aisha, which comes out, I think, select cities today. Nationwide on the 16th of October. And then it was just announced that she is in a film called Mercy, with Jamie Foxx, Michael B. Jordan, Brie Larson. She plays the wife, and it's great. She's going to be big, big, big real quick. And I'm so happy that I was able to give her her first leading role. But what was great about our first meeting is that when we met, like, you have to realize, this is audio, I assume, right?
It is.
The podcast.
Correct.
So I'm sitting here as a white male. And I, as a white male, wrote, this role, a very meaty role for an African American female, where it really gets into an African American female's experiences in corporate Hollywood, which, of course, as a white dude, I don't really know. So I had to do a lot of research, and it was the sort of thing where when I was writing the script, and even past that, I was a little bit afraid, because I had people telling me, like, I don't know if you should do that. I don't know if you as a white dude should be trying to tell an African-American woman's story. But it just felt right. It was something that I needed to do. I needed to tell an underrepresented, you know, person's POV, an underrepresented story. So I just stuck to my guns, as terrifying as it was. And when I met with Karen for the first time, she had read the script, and I will forever remember this. She said, when I read the script, it was like you had written my upbringing and my life. And I was like, you are kidding me. Like, that was the highest compliment that I could have ever received. That, you know, I was actually able to do that POV justice. So yeah, with that, she hopped on board, and she just absolutely killed it. I mean, there's a few long stretches of dialogue and monologues, that Karen has and that Ken has. Everybody just nailed it. So yeah, couldn't be happier.
Now, we don't want to forget the other two people in the film. They'll be upset if we don't mention them.
Of course.
So where did you find the other two? And they kind of look alike, too. I think you did. I told you. They look alike. They dress alike.
Yep. Yep. First and foremost, there's Rainn Jameson, who plays Tyler. And that's the person that we first meet in the film. And he has been a part of this team, the sales team, for a couple of years now, and he feels like he is due that promotion, that big promotion to the directorship. He's just a manager right now. It's been 2 years. He's put in the work. He has his own accounts. He is ready to step up. And so, understandably, he flips out when he finds out that he's getting let go. So, yeah, it's fun to see him go from, a little bit hopeful to beleaguered to completely, rage-filled and knowing that he's going to, sort of try to take this whole thing down. And if he's successful or not, I will let, the audience go out there and watch the movie to find out. And then you've got Torin Kitts, who plays Garrett, who is the new guy on the team. And he's just sort of brought in for this big call just to sort of look and listen and just see how this team operates. But through Tyler's, attempts to sabotage the call, Ken sort of pushes Garrett to a little bit of a more prominent position. So he and Tyler are sort of, on the same level, which of course pisses Tyler off. And, as you mentioned, right hooks here, right hooks there. But Garrett is new. But the fun part about Garrett is that he's the type of person who's willing to do whatever it takes to make a good impression. So there may be something a little insidious behind that character.
Okay. We've got your film going. We have your cast. You got a location. You got to feed these people. You're in LA. That's not cheap.
No, that's not cheap.
So how did you feed your cast?
Well, we just got some catering. I forget the restaurants that we did, but there's a bunch of restaurants where you call ahead and, like you're having an office party or whatever. We're like, we need X amount of sandwiches and we'll do that. We just gave everybody a menu at the beginning of the day and we're like, hey, let us know what you want. And, we had, some great people who went out and grabbed it and fed everybody. But, that was like the day to day, the meals, right? Cause we did breakfast and then we did lunch and then we had wrapped before it was dinner time.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Now we were only doing, 10 hour days with, and I think it was an hour break for lunch. Before that, I had to get all the crafty together. That's all the snacks and everything beforehand. And let me tell you, due to my, production assistant days, I was well versed in going out and buying crafty. Like I knew how to do that. So, it was funny. My now wife and I were living in a one bedroom and we just went to, one of those big box stores, bought a ton of stuff, had two, carts just completely full of stuff. And our dining room area was just completely full with crafty, for the first couple of weeks of shooting. So yeah. But you've got to do that. And that was the thing that I was, being on all these sets and understanding that the way to keep people invested and involved and motivated is to feed them well. Like that's the biggest thing. You have to feed them well. So I made sure that there were plenty of water, plenty of drinks, plenty of food. Because the worst thing, and, hearing the crew talk on other films when the catering was bad or the crafty was bad, like, that just impacts morale so much. And I had heard, those bitch sessions, and I just understood. I was like, I do not want that. Because I know, crew thinks of the meals as one of the most important things because you are being taken care of then. So having to put, people through four arduous, quick-moving days, I was like, I have to feed them well. So a decent amount of the budget went to that, but it was absolutely worth it because it kept everybody excited and invested.
Well, that's good to hear. I mean, I always like to hear cast fed, or I'm going to hear about it myself from somebody. Do you feel you're having your female lead as a black Afro-American? I hate to identify, I'm sorry. I'd just rather say woman. Do you think that was a positive image for you as a filmmaker?
I don't really think about the image of that. But what I do know is that, the thing that I tend to do, when I make films is I want to represent the unrepresented. And I like telling the female side of things. I grew up with two older sisters. So, you know, women are just, you know, they're just people to me, you know? So I wanted to tell those types of stories. So that's the sort of thing. The short, it's called No Touching. It's about two women, that go into one of those haunted houses where the cast members can touch you, but you can't touch them back. There's a couple of, you know, guys in there that are just there to get their jollies, get their rocks out. So they're groping the women. And they mess with two women that you shouldn't mess with. Zoe Bell, who's, you know, a great actor, in Tarantino's films. And then Heidi Moneymaker, who is, Black Widow's stunt double on all of the Marvel Studios films. There's the two cast, and they get messed with, and they're not the two women that you want to mess with. So the short film is just them kicking the ass of all these guys throughout the entire, haunted house. And then when it came time, you know, for Broken Ceiling, it was one of those things where I was looking at the story sort of from my perspective. And you've seen it, and when people see it, you know that for a little bit, you kind of think that it's Tyler's story. And that was sort of on purpose. And it was in the writing of it when I just sort of realized that, you know, my sort of complaints about my station in life maybe weren't as valid as somebody else's. And I sort of sat back and I thought, I was like, you know, like, I am here. I have a great job. I've been able to do a lot of things. Yes, I haven't, you know, made my first feature film by the time I was 30, but I have the ability to go ahead and fund this myself and put this out there. And I just felt like I needed to give somebody else sort of the spotlight. You know, so it wasn't a woe is me thing. It was like, if I was a Black woman, would I be where I am now? What were all of these benefits that I got that I maybe don't know, you know, just by the basis of being a white male? So, that was why I really wanted to do that. Yeah, I didn't think how that would, you know, help me as a filmmaker, moving forward. But the thing that I have noticed, and it's terrible how timely these things still are, because we shot Broken Ceiling and No Touching in 2015. And, you know, this year alone with all the Me Too and the Kavanaugh stuff, it's, you know, it's unfortunately still timely, the misogyny, and, you know, people who are still underrepresented and can't sort of break those glass ceilings.
So what did you do with your film? It's your first film. You live in Hollywood, so you probably do have connections in some way to get it shown and people sure. to see it.
Yeah, yeah. It was a little bit – it's a little bit tough because even if you have connections, the type of film that you have sort of gets put in its own little bucket. So this is a low budget, indie thriller. And so the best possible distributor for that was Indie Rights Films, who have been fantastic. And for a time I thought that I was just going to self-distribute because, you know, some of the bigger distributors, it wasn't really well suited for. It was able to have a 1 week theatrical run in Hollywood thanks to Indie Rights, which was fantastic. I heard from the people at the box office that it was one of the more widely attended movies that they've had, which I thought was great. But yeah, Indie Rights was able to get it on Amazon and iTunes, Google Play, YouTube. So the process was super easy. They've done a lot, you know, but they're pretty straight up with you that a lot of it is on you to go out and market. So that's what I've been doing, you know. Trying to get, you know, people interested in the Instagram. That's something that I've been working pretty hard on right now, the Instagram Broken Ceiling movie. It's all about, you know, troubles in the workplace, women in the workplace, what's fair, what's not fair. It has a lot of really good topical information. So I urge people to check that out, Broken Ceiling movie on Instagram. Yeah.
Okay, I do have one final question. Did your film screen in your hometown?
It did not.
Why not?
You know what? That is a great question because, back in my hometown, I used to work in a movie theater throughout high school, throughout college, and it has been my goal since I became a filmmaker out here to show a movie in the theater that I used to work in, that I used to clean up puke in, that I used to, you know, clean up all these messes and sell tickets and, you know, be the projector. Like, I want that so bad, and I will make that happen. I guess I could go and, like, buy out a theater and try to show it myself. Maybe I'll look into that. But yeah, that is a big goal for me one day to get a movie to play in White Bear Lake, Minnesota, where I used to work at.
So last thing, we don't want to leave the music guy out, because you do have music featured in your film. We don't want to leave him out. Let's discuss some music.
Absolutely. So these two guys who are absolutely fantastic, Ian Flux and Chris Potts, did the score for this. And I cannot tell you how exciting it is to have somebody make a score, make music for your film. Like, being a music fan, I talked with them a lot about what influences I sort of wanted, the type of feeling that I wanted to get out of it. You know, I wanted it to be oppressive and a little electronic and, you know, really sort of feel in some ways like the music of an oppressive office. And they really nailed it. I mean, the music that they put together, the themes that they have for Angela and Ken and that opening song, like, it's the sort of thing where I'm just so grateful that they put so much work into it. And it's like, this should go up on, like, SoundCloud or iTunes just as music, because that was the biggest thing I wanted. I wanted to be able to enjoy listening to it. There's a lot of times when scores just don't really hit for me because the music is just there to, like, accentuate movements, you know, like the trills of the flutes or whatever. And when you listen to it in your car, you're like, well, this isn't like music to me that I'm listening to. Like, I need the visuals to match that. And so what I think is, you know, the most impressive is when, you know, a composer can make some music that works amazingly well with the visuals on screen, but that you want to listen to on its own. And I think that Ian and Chris really nailed that. So I just couldn't be happier. It's great.
Well, thank you. But I do have fun question time. Everybody's favorite random question time, if you're ready.
Yeah. Let's do it.
All right. Favorite order at In-N-Out Burger?
Oh, my God. Yeah. It is a double-double animal style with animal style fries.
Milkshake?
A lot of calories in that.
Milkshake?
Occasionally. But that may just, I would balloon up to like 1,000 pounds if I did that.
Oh, come on. It's a milkshake. It's like 110 degrees. You got to have a milkshake.
I know.
Now, I didn't go into this in the film, but you did reference the Magic Castle.
Yeah.
How many times have you been there?
Oh, my God. One time. And it was amazing. Oh, my gosh. It's so hard to get in. Although I have a bunch of friends who tend to get in all the time. And I was like, how are you doing this? It's so hard to get in. But they just have all these connections. But yeah, I was able to go one time. It was so cool. The dinner that you have was delicious. And then you can sort of traverse all these different rooms that have different magic shows going on. It's like a little underground, you know, all these little hidden spaces. It's so fun. And it's like up close magic, and they're just blowing your mind. So yeah, I would love to go again at some point.
So you grew up in Minnesota, which you told me.
Yep.
And you moved to L.A. So yep. You know what this question is going to be about. Do you miss the snow?
I don't. But I will tell you what I do miss. I do miss the fall. I miss right now. I miss the changing of the leaves. Like, I'm looking out my window right now, and it's a bunch of palm trees, and they're all green. And I couldn't tell if it's, like, October or not. It could be December. It could be, you know, May. It's all sort of the same. So I miss the leaves falling from the trees. I miss being able to wear a coat. Coats are cool. Long sleeves are cool. I can't wear that when it's so hot. Yeah, I just miss that feeling because I love Halloween and I love the spookiness. And when everything's sort of gray, and, you know, the leaves have fallen and the trees are bare skeletons, it's a great feeling that you just kind of don't get out here.
Just because you're in Minnesota, I'm going to give you a bonus question.
Okay.
What's like watching a hockey game in L.A. compared to watching a hockey game in Minnesota?
No one cares about hockey in L.A.
Does that not kill you?
It's the Kings. Unless the Kings are, like, in the Cup, then yeah. Yeah, no, it's tough. They just love USC football out here, you know, some other stuff. There's a lot of transplants, but hockey isn't the biggest thing. So, yeah, I do miss going to games, you know, the Gophers, the Wild. Yeah, that is something that they just don't really have out here.
Okay. Well, yeah. I just want everybody to know we didn't discuss your film because there's too many left and right hooks, and I would ruin something if we brought it up. So I want everybody to know it was an excellent film. Please watch it. Don't base the film on this interview. We didn't go into it because I can't. And he'll agree with me. There's too much stuff we would give away if we went into it.
Yeah, it's got huge twists.
And that's why I kind of just left them alone the best I could.
Yeah, yeah.
And I guess the biggest thing I got to tell people to pay attention to is the guy on the phone. Listen to him. And I'm not ruining anything.
No. I do have to give a shout-out to Jay Disney.
Yes.
The actor who is the guy on the phone, Mr. Bradford. I will have to tell you because it totally spoils the movie, but when we sort of close out of here, I'll tell you the secret that Jay Disney sort of carried, which is a great story. But yeah.
Well, thank you. This was fun, and good luck on your film.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye. Hey, I just want to say thank you for listening to this great interview. We have more on our website at www.extrafeatures.ca. And if you enjoyed it, can you please go to iTunes and leave us an iTunes review and like us on our Facebook page. Thank you.